Blog Talk Radio.
An all-access football exclusive.
Welcome to another edition of The End Zone. I'm your host, Bo Marchant, and you're here with me today. It's a Tuesday. We're after week five. We got the 0-5 Tennessee Titans. I think that's the shocker of the NFL. A lot of news to cover. Something I want to touch base on quickly as we hit the show right off the bat was the trade of Braylon Edwards. You know, when you look at a trade like that and you look at a franchise like the Cleveland Browns, and then you take the whole idea of what Cleveland and all the mishaps and bad trades and things that have happened with that city, not only with the Cleveland Browns, but every other sport, it makes you wonder. Anyone who watched the game last night between the New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins, anyone could not notice that Braylon Edwards had catch after catch after catch, three catches with, you know, the goal line catch. He jumps in the air, he spins, he turns, he brings the ball down, showing super hands and something he was more similar to Braylon Sizzler's hands when he was in Cleveland. It just goes back to look at a guy like Edwards, unhappy in Cleveland. When he got news that he had to leave to go via the trade, there might not have been a more happy man in America when his agent called, however he got the news, to say, hey, you're out of Cleveland. You don't have to play here anymore. You're going to a team on the rise, not a team that's dysfunctional, has been dysfunctional since they've come back to the NFL. Edwards had to be thrilled, and he showed it last night. He made catches. He had the great play where I thought the call was questionable. Granted that he got the call on the pass interference that got the ball down to the one where Thomas Jones punched it in to give the Jets the go-ahead before Miami came back. But you look at a guy like Braylon Edwards, you know, a renewed outlook on his career now. I mean, this guy looked like a guy that was going to, you know, watch his career basically, you know, fall apart right in front of our very eyes. Remember 2 years ago he had the great 16-touchdown season. It looked like he was on his way to being one of the elite guys out there. Everything fell apart around the team, and then you started to see the dysfunction of the team and his game, the drops, and I think that's what he became famous for. Something he couldn't get past in Cleveland is the drops. The fans were aware of it. He was aware of it, and I think that's why you saw his numbers and those drops just accumulate and grow. And now he's in New York, and you know he had a great game last night. You know, I think they said that he was one of the only guys, you know, one of the few who actually played the week and started after he got traded. I mean, and how well did he do? I mean, Mark Sanchez, he was thrilled. You know, he was excited saying that he got a new toy. And it just goes back to looking at a team like Cleveland. I mean, other sports. I mean, you look at Sean Kemp. I mean, when Sean Kemp was with the Seattle Supersonics, I mean, he was like the Mac Daddy of all basketball. I mean, the guy was awesome. I mean, it was Sean Kemp. He was the dunk master. He was wicked. I mean, it comes to Cleveland. They had them goofy aqua blue and orange uniforms. He comes here. He balloons up to like 700 tons. He was fatter than Oliver Miller, you know? And then you're looking at this guy like, what happened? He went to Cleveland is what happened. You know, I mean, Andre Rison, Bad Moon Rison. You know, he's in Atlanta just tearing it up, crazy yards, free agency. Boom, he hits Cleveland. What is he? He's like a decoy. You know, he spends one season there, I believe, and then he just, you know, it's just awful. I mean, it's a place where players go to die. You know, look at Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, the Cavaliers think they're getting 1993 Shaq. No, you're not. You're getting 2010 Shaq, okay? The guy's going to be 37. He's not exactly a little spring chicken. You know, a great way to help out LeBron. Speaking of, when you look at a guy like LeBron, you think of Manny Ramirez when he was with the Indians. Great player, but man, Manny became one of the all-time best once he left Cleveland. I mean, guy's been phenomenal postseason. I mean, Manny has been clutch. Cleveland, good, but not great. Same thing, these guys leave. Joe Carter, these guys go, they get better. LeBron, if LeBron does leave Cleveland, imagine what he'll do if he actually goes to New York. Because everyone who leaves this city, really, their game, you know, their game expands. I don't know what it is. That city's cursed. The sports franchises are cursed. You can say what you want, but Braylon Edwards was a perfect example of another guy stuck in that dismal pit that they call Cleveland. And you can't escape it. I mean, it's there. It's everyone. It's aware for everyone to see. You can't hide it. I mean, it's blatantly sickening what happens when guys leave there compared to when guys come here. It's sad. You know, and off the top of my head, who was the guy from the Saints, the offensive tackle they signed 2 years ago? From the area, you know, loved it. First play, practice, minicamp, blows the knee out. I mean, it's just the way it goes. So buyer beware. If you're heading to Cleveland free agency, listen, everything your game, it's going south. And vice versa. Anyone who's stuck there or you got the chance to escape, go there and enjoy an MVP All-Pro, super fantastic career. And like I said, this is going to go on. They show the two trades. I mean, Mark Sanchez and Braylon Edwards are two trades that the Jets, they acquired those guys through trades with the Browns. I mean, you look at that now. It's insane. And Mangini, you got Ratliff, you got Derek Anderson, you got Brady Quinn. Nobody knows what's going on. And then next year, they'll probably draft a quarterback next year because they don't know who to start now. Like I said, Braylon Edwards, fantastic job last night. I was really impressed with the way he played. You know, but like I said, the whole Cleveland thing, it's something that you can't escape. You can't hide it. It's just it's a sad, sad situation. And like I said, I mean, the Cleveland fans, I think, have lost their pride. I think they've even lost the sense that they even are competitive. You know, I think they're a group that likes to talk trash. I mean, you know, the Steelers and Browns, is that even a rivalry anymore? I mean, I can't wait to go to the game this weekend, and I can't wait to ask these guys, is this a rivalry, especially to the news guys? I mean, when I go into the locker room and I ask, you know, a Lima Swede, or if I'm going to ask a Mike Wallace, I'm like, have you heard anything about even there being a rivalry between you and the Steelers? I mean, is it now you and the Ravens? I mean, do you even get up for the Cleveland Browns? Does anybody get up for the Cleveland Browns? And as sad as that sounds, is they beat the Buffalo Bills, and that's a whole other topic for a whole other day. I don't think we have a show long enough to talk about what's going on in Buffalo. That's a dismal, dysfunctional offense. And the funny thing is, T.O. has kept his mouth shut. And actually, if there's ever a time that he might actually want to T.O. off on what's going on around him, he remains silent. I mean, when he was in San Francisco, when he was in Philly, when he was in Dallas, the team still moved the ball. I mean, Garcia was going to Pro Bowls. Donovan McNabb was going to Pro Bowls. It wasn't like these guys. And then you look at it, you look at T.O. with these teams, you have the 49ers, you have the Eagles, you have the Cowboys. They were moving the ball. They had offenses that were successful. Now, when you look at the Buffalo Bills, they're not moving the ball. T.O. would get upset because why? He wasn't getting the ball. Everybody else was. It wasn't the fact that, you know, he got mad because Jason Witten was getting 7 catches for 93 yards, and he wasn't getting those balls. I mean, Romo was still passing the ball. Now you have this dismal, dysfunctional Bills offense. T.O. remains quiet, and I think if there's ever an actual time where you could actually rally behind T.O. in this cause for Buffalo to get their heads out of their butts and actually move the football, this would be the time that you want to do that, because right now, Buffalo is a sad place to be offensively and defensively. I mean, the guys on the defensive side of the ball, they're falling off the globe. I mean, you have Whitner, Brian Scott, they just lost their linebacker, Kawika Mitchell. I mean, these guys are falling fast. The team's very in disarray. And you wonder how long it's going to go before Ralph Wilson makes a change from the head coaching job down. And like I said, it's a crazy season, but like I said, getting back to Cleveland, it's a bad time. Cleveland's dysfunctional. There's no identity to the team. And like I said, I can't wait to, you know, ask these guys this weekend when the Pittsburgh Steelers host the Cleveland Browns to actually see, hey, do you consider this game a rivalry? I mean, do you even get up? Is there even any talk amongst the veterans like Hines Ward? I mean, is there any pep talk like, hey, we got to win this game? Vice versa. I mean, in the Browns locker room, does Brady Quinn even know? I mean, I know he grew up in Ohio. I mean, he had to be aware of it back in the day. But is this something he looks at now like, wow, this is a rivalry game? I don't know. It's sad. It's a sad situation. It's insane how bad some of these football teams are. And it's something I don't think we've seen in the NFL in a long time. I mean, I think it's a surprise. Obviously, you have the 0-5 Tennessee Titans. And you look at that team, and you know, it all came down to those two missed Rob Baronis' kicks that opening night, that Thursday night in Pittsburgh. Rob Baronis makes those two field goals. You really have to wonder if the Titans' season, maybe they're 3-2, but probably not 0-5. We'll never know. It is what it is. They are 0-5. You know, now the questions start. You know, even though it's not Collins' fault, do they start to use Vince Young? And if they use neither one, if they just continue to use Collins, because face it, 0-5, it's a lost cause right now. You got to see what you have out there. Nick Harper's gone. Cortland Finnegan's gone. They're two top DBs. They have New England this week. I mean, if there's a day where Tom Brady and Randy Moss and this New England offense can find itself, it might be this game, because other than that, you're talking, you know, Tennessee's in a world of hurting. The running game's non-existent because they can't, you know, they're putting 8-9 in the box. They're not scared of the passing game, and they're playing from behind. I mean, and that's the thing. They're not playing their style of football. And that's one thing that always scares me with teams like this. I mean, the Ravens were like this. Tennessee fell in that category. It's great to have a great defense. It's great to be able to run the ball, but you still have to be able to score. And I've never really fell in love with any of the teams that could beat you 10-3. I mean, the Steelers played the Ravens three times last year. I mean, when I thought of those games, I mean, what a gift for the Pittsburgh Steelers to play the Baltimore Ravens in the AFC Championship. I mean, that was like playing a dysfunctional offensive unit. I mean, as long as the Steelers scored 6 points, basically you could just sit on the ball because you know darn well that the Ravens can't move the ball. This year, totally different story. But like I said, Tennessee fell in that category. You get up on them. If it's 10-0, it's game over. It's done. They cannot move the football. You know, you can go back. I mean, the great Ravens team that won the Super Bowl, they got by on it. But when you go back and you look at all the other teams that have ever been able to actually take the title, you have to have it from both sides of the ball. None of these teams, you didn't see Joe Montana and the 49ers sitting on a 6-0 lead and having to wait on it. You know, these teams don't do it. A team like Tennessee, it finally caught up with them. You can only win like that, win at the high level like that so long, and it doesn't take you that far. I mean, they still have not won a Super Bowl. You know, they've been the one, like I said, and there's some, you need to be able to move the ball when you have to, and that's something that they cannot do. Like I said, Kerry Collins managed the game, and if you listen to the show, The End Zone, here on the Fantasy Sports Network at 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, I've said it 1,000 times, Kerry Collins had identical numbers to Jamarcus Russell last season. Their numbers were identical. The only thing that was different was the win-loss column. Why? Because Collins had a great supporting cast around him. Jamarcus Russell, he did not. I'm not saying Jamarcus Russell was better. Kerry Collins went to Honolulu. Jamarcus Russell is considered one of the worst quarterbacks in football. You do the math. You go back and look at the stats, and you tell me why. You know why? Because he had to manage the game. He didn't have to win the game. Just don't mess up. And you know what? I don't buy that. I don't want a guy that I have to depend on to say, you know what, don't mess up. Just don't blow it, and it will be okay. I mean, do you want anybody like that on your team? You know, dude, don't blow it. Just don't blow it. You're good. Just don't blow it for me. We'll be fine. That's not what you want. You want a guy that you're like, dude, you rule. I have faith in you. You're going to take us to the promised land. When everything's down and we need a guy to pick us up, you're going to be the guy. You're going to be the guy to lead us down the field. You're going to be the guy to take us to the promised land, no matter what the situation. 3rd and 18, I got confidence in you. I don't want to be a 3rd and 3 going, dude, don't blow it. Dude, don't blow this game. Please, don't mess this game up for us. I don't want that. Quarterback's a prize, prime position. Like I said, if you got a guy that has to manage the game at that position, you know what, you're looking for mediocrity for the rest of the season, for the rest of the duration where you have that guy under center. That's what you're going to have. You want to play, not to make mistakes. You're going to have a team that does not get ahead. I mean, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Donovan McNabb, these guys are top players. You know, Drew Brees isn't a guy where they're like, dude, just manage the game. No, he goes out and wins it. He puts the team up by 40. You know, and that's what happens. These guys, you know what, we need the ball. Boom! You know what? I'm looking at a team like the Saints, because we're just going to go all over the place today. This team reminds me of the Rams when they came out of nowhere. I know the Saints had some success, but when you look at the defense, that's how the Rams were that year they won the Super Bowl. the defense and the special teams, everybody, they were making plays left and right. Besides the offense just scoring at will, you had the defense doing the same. And like when they played the New York Jets, you had Darren Sharper returning touchdowns. You had the fumble recovery. You know, it wasn't. It didn't have to be just Drew Brees. It was everybody making it happen. They can run the ball. I mean, they run the ball so well, you might, they don't even have to pass. I mean, they hand the ball off to Mike Bell, Pierre Thomas, and these guys are going for $100, $1.50 on 10 carries. It's insane. Now, they give the ball to the guy who can't run it, Reggie Bush, and then you get your mediocre 3.2 yards per carry because, yeah, the guy cannot run the football in the NFL. That's just a fact. You want to spread him out and throw some screen passes for him to get 10 catches for 10 yards. That's going to be fine. But, you know, Pierre Thomas, Mike Bell, these guys can really move the rock. And like they said, they've been very successful. The Saints, to me, are a team that just have that magic right now. Granted, it's early. You got a lot of football left. But a team like that, the way everything's just moving for them, the defense has come around. Greg Williams has them playing fantastic. Those guys, you know, they're not reacting. They're thinking, you know, they're just doing it. They're having fun. They're playing. You know, they don't have to get bogged down in what they have to do. Greg Williams, he's letting them do that. And like I said, you're seeing a fantastic Saints defense along with that offense. And like I said, I mean, that is a great, great football team down in New Orleans. They don't have the they're not going to get the, you know, the history like the Giants because they had that Super Bowl title under their belt, or the Patriots, the Colts, you know, even, you know, the Eagles at least been there. Like I said, though, New Orleans is a team that you really want to look at. It reminds me a lot of that St. Louis Rams team that won the Super Bowl. An excellent offense, score-at-will offense. And the year that they won it, the defense was special. Special teams was special. They made a lot of great plays. They got to do, you know, they did a lot of nice things. And like I said, I mean, it was a good time. It was fun to watch, and I think that's how the Saints are this year. They're just a fun bunch to watch. They're an exciting team to watch. Like I said, I mean, you know, the Saints, they look great. I think New England looks bad. You look at that team this weekend. I mean, I know I think Brady's 1-6 versus Denver, so he's always struggled versus the Broncos. But, you know, there's just something. He missed Wes Welker at the end of the game. I think what should have been an easy touchdown, but he hit him in the foot. I mean, Brady is off. That offense is off. Fred Taylor's out for the year. I don't know how much they really wanted to lean on him, you know, but they're going to put the ball back in Sammy Morris's hands, it looks like, for the time being, before he gets hurt and then before they have to go to Kevin Falk. And probably after that, they would probably look to get Lawrence Maroney involved, but I think if they give him more than 7 carries, I think one of his shoulders will break or fall off. So that kind of puts the hamper on that whole philosophy. But like I said, New England, a team, they don't look too well. And they do have the 0-5 Titans coming to town. But like I said, I mean, the Titans are a team that, you know, even though their 0-5 record, I still think people, you know, have to consider them a team that could be deadly. You know, but like I said, who knows? I mean, 0-5, I mean, you wonder how long they're going to, you know, Jeff Fisher's going to be able to keep them guys focused before they kind of want to, you know, wrap it up and start looking forward to next season. I'm your host, Bo Marchant. You're in the End Zone here on the Fantasy Sports Channel, powered by All Access Football. And we got the 2010 mock draft there on the NFLDraftBible.com. That's something you guys are going to want to check out and see, because I know anyone who's listening right now, I know everybody loves fantasy football. That's the big talk. And as fantasy football grows, the things that you can do with it grow. And you guys, you're in keeper leagues. It's a fun thing. You want to start checking out those mock drafts. You know, future guys, you can go look at these C.J. Spillers. I mean, Spiller is one of the, you know, him and Javon Best might be the top two backs going into next year's draft. These guys are probably going to be vying for that top spot. So these are guys you're going to want to look, see where they might be projected to go. A lot of quarterback options. I mean, you have the discussions. Is Sam Bradford going to go? I personally think he does go. I don't see why he comes back to Oklahoma. Like I said, I know our college football insider, Justin Van Volpen, he believes that Bradford will come back. I'm on the other. I think he will go. I think he will forfeit that senior year. I think he's going to, you know, head to the NFL. And I think, like I said, this past season, I don't think how he would want to further risk injury or further, you know, himself, you know, to have a worse draft slot than what he could have had if he would have came out in 2009. Now, speaking of the NFL draft and speaking of mock drafts, something I want to get into you guys. Now, this will all be on the NFL draft Bible. I want to break this out to you guys early. This is some research that we've done, I did. And this goes back from 1992. And we're going to be breaking stuff like this down. This is stuff you're going to be able to find on the site. And, you know, this pertains to just the love for football, just to anything, you know, looking at these numbers. But this is wide receivers taken since 92 in rounds 3, 4, and 5. And I bring this up because, you know, this past season, the third round, you had a Patrick Turner, you had Brandon Tate, a Ramses Barden. You have Mike Wallace from the Steelers, who's playing exceptional. I mean, he's putting second-round pick Lima Sweet to the bench. You have Joaquin Legolas. Excuse me. You have Deion Butler, Patrick Turner. These guys were all third-round selections. Now, since 1992, now there's this is pretty funky stuff here. Since 1992, from the third round, you've had Robert Brooks, Antonio Freeman, Terrell Owens, Hines Ward, Marty Booker, Avernius Coles, Daryl Jackson, Steve Smith, Nate Burleson, Kevin Curtis, and those are the only guys who have exceeded 1,000 yards. The guys to look at is a Bernard Berrian, close. You have Mike Walker, drafted in 2007 in the third round. He's really coming around for Jacksonville. A guy like that, he's had knee problems, but he's a guy that's really making his presence felt finally in Jacksonville. So you got, you know, you look at this class now and you're starting to wonder, well, you know, which one of these guys, are, you know, who's going to take the next step? Because, you know, when you're looking at it, 10 guys in the third round since 1992 have eclipsed 1,000 yards. And that's not a lot. I mean, so when you look at this class, okay, and the last time we had a guy break 1,000 from the third round was 2003, and that's Burleson and Kevin Curtis. Those are the last two guys from that draft. Now, you got guys that are, you know, flip, you know, toying with it. You got a guy like Bernard Berrian, drafted in 2004, you know, has a real shot at making it. Last year's draft class, you have Andre Caldwell and Mario Manningham, early Doucette, Earl Bennett, and Harry Douglas. Like I said, Manningham playing extremely well right now. Caldwell, I mean, he's going to be a great receiver for the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, the kid has it. And like I said, and the funny thing is he might be able to kind of jinx some of those Florida guys that have come out, you know, over the years, the Travis Taylors, the Riddell Anthonys, you know, him and Lewis Murphy, you know, they look like they can be a real solid set of Florida wide receivers, something that we don't usually see come draft time is a Florida Gator wide receiver translate into a stout NFL, you know, guy who, you know, produces a lot. Like I said, but it's something to think about. I mean, when you're looking at these guys, you look at the names, you have Marquise Walker, E.G. Green, you know, Lake Dawson, Tamarik Vanover, you know, Chris T. Jones, Dez White, DeVard Darling, Courtney Roby. You know, these guys all, you know, third-round receivers, but, you know, most of them don't pan out. And it seems like if they do pan out, they pan out, but they pan out exceptionally well. Like I said, Robert Brooks, Freeman, Owens, Ward, Booker, Coles, Daryl Jackson, Steve Smith. You know, these guys are, you know, Owens and Steve, you know, those guys are standout guys. I mean, you know, Owens one of the best ever. Third round, though, you know, 1996. And when you look at those numbers, you know, 10 receivers since 1992 that have eclipsed 1,000 yards, it makes you wonder, you know, who's the next. And it seems like it takes these guys a couple years. So, you know, you might be seeing the, you know, the emergence of a Mike Walker now that he's healthy. And then, you know, in their second season, I mean, Mario Manningham was awful his first season. I mean, he was non-existent. But now he's starting to become a real factor for the New York Giants and Caldwell as well. I mean, Jerome Simpson, I think, was drafted in front of him, but Caldwell is really becoming a fixture in the Cincinnati offense along with Ocho Cinco. And, you know, you can see his role expanding week to week. He caught the touchdown pass this past weekend against the Ravens. So a guy like Caldwell, Manningham, they're guys that you're going to look at that could be that next, you know, next round of 1,000-yard guys. You know, a guy like Chris Henry, great, you know, from the Bengals, but still has not, you know, reached that plateau of 1,000 yards. And then you look at this year's draft class, you know, I think Brandon Tate, you know, he's on the IR already for the Pats. But somebody, you know, you might want to look at in the future, somebody that, you know, might be able to put up some good numbers, you know, once he gets going. I mean, you look Deion Butler, you wonder how long it's going to take him with the guys they already have in Seattle. And Derek Williams, I mean, you're looking at Brian Johnson, you're looking at Calvin Johnson, so you wonder how, you know, how long it's going to take for him to, you know, find a niche in the Lions offense. But it takes time. It takes time, and like I said, third-round guys since 1992, 10 1,000-yard receivers, which isn't a lot. You know, and like I said, when these guys all come out, I mean, everybody's excited. I mean, Chris Sanders, when he was, you know, in 95 with the Houston Oilers, you know, this guy was, you know, these guys were exciting names. They were guys that you really, you know, were looking to, you know, these guys are going to be difference makers in the NFL. You know, and like I said, time unfolds, and, you know, there's just no production. And, you know, slowly these names fall into the wayside, and they produce nothing. Now, when you're looking in the fourth round since 1992, these are fourth-round receivers drafted since 1992 that have eclipsed the 1,000-yard mark. These guys are, you know, and now we had 10 from the third round. Now think to yourself, what do you think that number drops to when you hit the fourth round? The number drops to 6. You've had Derek Mason, Marcus Robinson, Albert Connell, Brandon Stokely, Jericho Cautry, and 2006, can you guys think of it off the top of your head? Which fourth-round receiver in 2006 is a 1,000-yard receiver now? Can you think of it? If you guess Brandon Marshall, you guessed correctly. Huh? Fourth round, Brandon Marshall. Now, look, these are the names along with Brandon Marshall in that 2006. These are all the receivers fourth round. Dominique Hickson, Demetrius Williams, Skylar Green, Corey Rogers, and Jason Avant. So, like I said, I mean, it's a very hard find for these guys to succeed. 2009, the guys you're looking at, Austin Cauley, a huge game Sunday night against the Titans from the Indianapolis Colts. Mike Thomas, Brian Hartline, and the other Florida Gator, Lewis Murphy, who's played well even though he's in Oakland. So these are guys you might want to look at. Last season, you had Keenan Burton, Lavelle Hawkins, Armand Shields, Marcus Smith, and William Franklin. Those are the 2008 class. So, like I said, 6 guys in the fourth round since 1992 have made it to 1,000 yards. You know, and besides Derek Mason and probably Marcus Robinson, you know, the majority of these guys haven't had long careers. I mean, Albert Connell was good, but, you know, wasn't anything great. Brandon Stokely had that, you know, a couple thousand-yard season, but he wasn't one of those guys. I mean, great, I think, possession receiver, but he played in that system, you know, in, with the Colts and whatnot, where the ball was just flung around like crazy. Jericho Cautry, 2004. Now he has Braylon Edwards alongside of him. So that's something, you know, Cautry, I think, is a proven commodity, somebody that, you know, you can look to actually, you know, gain, you know, he's going to probably, I think, you know, become even better with Braylon Edwards alongside of him. And then you have Brandon Marshall. I mean, when he came out, they called him Baby T.O. just because of his brute size and strength. And if he doesn't get arrested or get into any legal troubles and he keeps his head clean and keeps his head on straight, you know, a guy like Brandon Marshall, I think, you know, has a real shot at doing some special things here in the NFL. Fifth round. These are fifth round receivers since 1992. Now we had 10 third rounders make it to 1,000. We had six fourth rounders make it to 1,000. Fifth round wide receivers who've eclipsed 1,000 yards. Now you guys want to take a guess? You guys gonna guess? Two. And they both came from 1996. Patrick Jeffers, and it wasn't long. And then we had the guy who had a great career, Joe Horn, former Chief, New Orleans Saint, Joe Horn. You know, you had some guys flirting with it, like Doug Gabriel, you know, a guy like that. But when you look at these guys, like I said, it's hard. So, like, when you look at these names now, Brooks Foster, 2009, Johnny Knox, Kenny McKinley for the Broncos, Jared Dillard. I mean, these guys are all hyped up. These are guys, you know why? Because they're new. They haven't had a chance to not succeed yet. You know, you play college, you look great in college, then you get drafted or you're a free agent, and then you make it to the pros. Everything's still going on your side. And then the NFL actually starts, and then you're actually playing in it, and then you have to see, well, where do you actually measure out? I mean, where does the competition, where do you fall on the line with this competition? I mean, are you going to succeed over the competition? Or are you going to fall behind it? And then we're just going to fade into oblivion. We're never going to hear from you again. Like I said, I mean, last season you had Kenny Moore and Matt Slater. The year before that, fifth round, you had Roy Hall, Andre Allison. You know, now, Legay Unani from the Chargers, he's kind of finding a nice little niche. Oh, my bad. You had three 1,000 starters. Steve Breston, 2007. He hit the mark last season in that potent Cardinals offense. I apologize for that. Three fifth-round receivers since 1992 have hit that 1,000-yard mark. But other than that, these guys, I mean, you know, third round, I mean, you Andre Hastings, Lamar Thomases, Chris Penn, I mean, Corey Fleming, Dedrick Ward. I mean, these names are Marvin Minnis. How many of you guys remember Marvin Minnis? So, like I said, these guys are always coming out of college. They're always going into the draft, especially third round guys. I mean, you think these guys are going to be able to flip the switch and get it done. But like I said, you're looking at these 2009 guys. And the reason I want to bring this up is when you guys are looking at the draft next season and you see these receivers going in the third round, fourth round, fifth round, it really gives you and narrows your mind down to what type of production you're going to actually get out of these guys. How good are these guys really going to be when they get to the pros? I mean, when you look at them, you know, you're kind of wondering, I don't know. So I think like 64 some receivers, you know, and from 92 to 2007. So like I said, it's they're 2009. You know, these receivers are taken, and you see how hard it is for these guys to really produce. And rounds 3, 4, and 5, it really gets scarce when you're looking for a guy who can really be a long-term answer to the team that you root for a fantasy team. Just maybe the college, you know, USC, Patrick Turner. You know, you want to see what this guy's going to do when he's in Miami. You know, is he going to pan out? Is he going to become a difference maker for the Dolphins? You know, right now, no. Why? Because, you know, he's a rookie. But you got to wonder how long is it going to take for him to, you know, show if he can do it. And, you know, is he going to succeed? So like I said, this is all going to be stuff that you're going to find on the NFL Draft Bible. And you're listening to Bo Marchand in the End Zone here on the Fantasy Sports Network. And we have a lot of other shows. We have, you want to go to our site, and you can find out all the other guys that have shows. That, you know, we have Dan Mogagnon, College Football Insiders. We have Rob Brewer. He's taken to the 8 Men on the Box on Thursdays at 5 o'clock. These guys bring it to you, and, you know, they got great insight. And like I said, it's something you want to check out here on the Fantasy Sports Channel. Fantasy sports all day long. I know I listen. It's always fun just hearing guys. You know, you always pick up something you might not have heard no matter what the topic is. It's always good to listen. It makes the time go past quickly. Oh, here on a Tuesday, week 5. Like I said, a couple undefeated teams in the NFL. We're talking some wide receiver draft talk, stuff you can find on the NFL Draft Bible when we get it up there. I'm going to get this off to these guys, and these guys are going to get it up there. And it's something you guys can start breaking down, looking at yourself and start comparing the numbers. Like I said, because, you know, you start looking at next year's draft class, you're going to start wondering, you know, third, fourth, sixth, all these guys around, these guys get picked. You're going to be all hyped up for them because they got that big college name, and they come from that big college program, and they tore up the Big Ten. They couldn't be stopped. You know, and then reality hits. You know what? You're not playing against some kid from Northwestern anymore. You know, you're sitting across from, you know, Darnell Revis. Then you're not going to catch 17 balls for, you know, 484 and 7 touchdowns because this is big boy football now. This isn't college football. Like I said, they're all good in college. If they weren't good in college, they wouldn't make it to the pros, and that's what everyone forgets. You know, it's great to be great in college. Like I said, it's a whole other skill set when you get to that next level. And I said, and that's why you see so many fail, and that's why sometimes you see some succeed. I mean, for whatever reason, you know, you see guys coming out of nowhere, and they play great, and somehow along the way, they weren't considered a five-star blue-chip super gem guy, and they, you know, they don't get recruited by one of the top schools in the nation, and they have to go to a, you know, smaller D1 school, sometimes D2, and, you know, and there they go. And like I said, from that point on, it's an uphill battle for those guys. And this isn't to take away the guys to go to the big schools either, because they're phenomenal. But like I said, once you get that early slot, that helps you in the long run. decide where you're going to end up and how far you're going to go on the NFL landscape. And that big contract that you're going to get if you are lucky enough to be a first or second round, first day guy. A lot of money, a lot to be made for these guys. Careers are short. I don't blame them. Like I said, and talking to some of these guys, you know, they just graduated. They went through the combine. You know, they had their pro days, and these guys are out of work. And for these guys now, I mean, they're just looking for a job. It's not so much, you know, they want to play football, but they need money. I mean, this is, you know, college is over. This is it. I mean, these guys are in the real world now. Like I said, and that's a lot of pressure because, I mean, these guys are trying to make it. You don't know. You're signed to a practice team one day. You're cut the next day. You know, it's a hard process. Like I said, and the more as I actually learn this whole process myself, what these guys got to throw to my heart goes out to them. Like I said, I mean, you know, people, the big guys making a ton of money, you know, you don't really pity because you know they're set for life. But these guys really trying to make a team, I mean, really, it's a hard spot to be in because that window is so short. And by the time you get done, you know, going through this whole process, you get a whole new set of guys coming out next season trying to take the job that you're trying to get that you still haven't got. And like I said, I know for me, you know, some of the guys that I talk with, you know, I wish them that they can get signed. You know, we stay in touch. You know, look at that waiver where I, you know, you see if anybody's gotten hurt. You know, what team is going to be looking for an offensive tackle? You know, will they be able to sign this guy that hasn't played yet? You know, and that's something you said. These guys, they got to stay in shape every day, waiting for that phone call to get picked up. But third, fourth, fifth round receivers. You know, we had 10, we had 6, we had 19. 19 receivers have gone over 1,000 yards since 1992, taken in the third, fourth, and fifth rounds. And like I said, that's a crazy, 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 crazy number when you think about it. Because like I said, these guys are all, you know, all supposed to kind of pan out and be guys that were going to maybe be different. Like Dez White, Ron Dugans, you know, Chris Cole, Ron Dixon. Like I said, these guys, Todd Kitchen. Big names, Johnny Lee Higgins. We're still waiting for Johnny Lee Higgins. How many guys out there still waiting for Johnny Lee Higgins to put it all together, huh? 2007 third-round pick for the Oakland Raiders, huh? Johnny Lee Higgins. I'm your host, Bo Marchant, and we're kicking it here in the end zone. Some other things I want to touch base with you guys is it me or, I mean, when I'm watching some of these games over the weekend, it's amazing how bad some of these football teams are. And it's amazing me as how they can prepare all week and be so dysfunctional. I mean, like I said, the Cleveland Browns and Buffalo Bills just come to mind instantly. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, again, just you wonder what happens. And like I said, it's disheartening for me that anyone who actually paid money to go sit in Buffalo to watch those teams play, I would almost feel, you know, offended if I was the owners of either one of those teams and say, I put a great product on the field. I mean, it's a business, but I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. Like, how many businesses could be this bad and survive, you know? I mean, if this was a restaurant down in your local, if the Buffalo Bills or Cleveland Browns were local restaurants down on the corner of your street, they'd be out of business in 3 weeks. Because the food stunk, whatever. The restaurant was dirty. Who knows why, but I guarantee you they'd be closing the doors in 3 weeks because they could not succeed. But the way it's set up, you know, you're entrenched in there. You're not going to get kicked out no matter how bad it gets. And it's sad. I mean, you look at the Oakland Raiders. I mean, the organization from the outside, I mean, the inside. I mean, you have head coaches beating up assistant coaches allegedly. I mean, it's insane how bad these football teams are and how they get away with it. And there's no consequence. You know what I mean? They could be bad from now until forever. I mean, look at the Pittsburgh Pirates. There's no consequence. They can just stink. That's it. You can stink no matter what because you got revenue sharing. You have everything else. You know what? It's fine. You can stink. Who cares? We'll stink. If we get anybody good, we'll move them on to another place so they can become better. Like I said, there's some bad, bad football teams in the NFL. And like I said, it's something we haven't seen. You know, there's always been one or two bad football teams, but it's been a long time since you could really count, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, the St. Louis Rams, the Detroit Lions, the Cleveland Browns, Oakland Raiders. I mean, these are teams where they have no chance, none. Then you have a team like the Tennessee Titans who are actually, you know, you got to think they're still somewhat decent, and they're still 0-5. You know, no shot. And that's a team I think you're definitely going to want to look at next season, taking a quarterback. And Jonathan Hutton, who comes in from the Titans, you know, he says Bud Adams is a big Texas football guy, so I just want to throw it out there. Start thinking Colt McCoy, if it could happen. Colt McCoy, Texas quarterback, you know, Tennessee Titans. Like I said, you heard it here first. Just something to think about. And in a couple weeks, where I'm going to be interviewing Myron Roll. If you guys aren't familiar, or if you've forgotten about him, he was the Florida State safety DB who earned the Rhodes Scholarship, and that is a scholarship from Oxford University. That's an international scholarship they hand out. I shouldn't say they hand out, but that's given to a student who's worthy of such a deserving honor. And he got that scholarship. He's in Oxford right now, but he's going to be joining us in the next week or so, and we're going to touch base with him. He's been working out in Florida, and he's in tip-top shape. I talked with his agency. He's represented by Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment. And Myron Roll, I mean, he's 6'2". He's around 216 right now. Jeremiah Donati represents him. So he doesn't have an ounce of body fat on him. You know, he just looks phenomenal. And he's, you know, his goal is to make it in the NFL. He's going to be playing in the Senior Bowl. He's also going to be working out at Indy, from what I heard. So a guy like that, you know, he falls off, you know, kind of the face of the earth because he's not in the mix right now. But, I mean, this is a standout guy, one of the top prospects, you know, from that position. A guy that, you know, if you go to Indy, you have a good week at the Senior Bowl, you can really, you really improve your stock. And you know the kid's head's on straight. So that's one thing. You know the kid ain't going to go in there. There's going to be any question mark about character with him. I mean, that's bonus point. So you got to jack him up at least five spots ahead of everybody else, wherever you're going to place him. Because they might not know you, but they know for a fact that this kid got it going. This kid's head is on straight. You're not going to have to worry about this guy driving, you know, a Hummer, you know, at 4 in the morning, you know, backwards through a park with 7 guns, prostitutes, and drugs and the paraphernalia throughout the whole thing. This guy, he's got it. He's going and doing good. And like I said, Myron Bell, or Myron Roll, Florida State. Like I said, he's going to be making his way back into the NFL world, back into that mix, back into that process. You know, oh, the big, oh, I love it. It gets me fired up. You know, combine time, pro days, college draft. That's what we live here for, the NFL draft Bible. So, like I said, Myron Roll, he's going to be coming on. We're going to have a nice player spotlight show with him, bring you up to date on what he's going through, what he's been doing, preparing, and what he's doing in Oxford right now. Like I said, the guy's over, you know, guys in Oxford, England, you know, getting smarter by the day, and you guys are getting smarter by the day listening to the End Zone here on the Fantasy Sports Channel powered by All Access Football. We've got 15 minutes left in the show. And we've been touching on all kinds of things, football. And like I said, you know, some bad NFL football teams out there, teams that really have no shot. And it's going to make it interesting because there's going to be a lot of teams vying for that number one pick next year. I mean, you wonder if we're going to see another 0-16 team, a team like Oakland. You really wonder if they're ever going to put it together. You wonder what they're going to have to do with a guy like Jamarcus Russell. I mean, when you have a guy like Jamarcus Russell, This is to me football 101. The first thing you do, any guy at a skill position that has a weight issue, you do not pick. That's it. You don't go any further than that. Mike Williams, USC receiver, Jamarcus Russell. If these guys have weight issues at skill positions, you just simply don't draft them. I mean, you hear rumors, and I think the more that you hear these things, that means there's some truth to them. I mean, you don't hear about Peyton Manning not working hard. You hear about Peyton Manning working diligently night and day to get better and better and better and better. When you hear the opposite stuff about a guy like Jamarcus Russell, he's lazy, he misses practices, these type of things, and you hear him from this source and that source, there has to be some truth to it. And you know what? The team's not going to come out and say, you know what, we're on the hook guaranteed $30 million to this guy. They're not going to come out and look like they got egg on their face because he's a bust. You know, they got to defend their product. They got to, you know, they got to, this collateral damage, they got to cover it up and say, hey, you know, everything's cool. He's cool. We're cool. The franchise is cool. Al Davis is cool. Everybody's cool. Darius Hayward Bay's cool. Everybody's cool. But you know what? In the end, they don't have no faith in this guy. He'd go have no faith in himself. okay? He's Jamarcus Russell, and that's what it is. And the only reason he got picked where he did is because Vince Young had a superb rookie season. They saw Vince Young. They compared it to Jamarcus Russell. That's why Jamarcus Russell had the season. That's why he got drafted where he did, because of that. If Vince Young would have bombed his rookie season, Jamarcus Russell would not have been the first pick by the Oakland Raiders. Mark my word, would have never happened. They saw the success of Vince Young. Copycat league. What did they want to do? They wanted to transplant. They wanted to say, hey, let's get Jamarcus Russell, get him in. Throw everything else, the laziness, the overweight issues, missing practices. It doesn't matter. Now, like I said, they're on the hook. And you got to wonder what this team's going to do with them, because I think he knows that. You know what? He's guaranteed the money, $30 million. He's guaranteed. He's not worried about it. Why would he be worried about it? I know if my employer, if I was $30 million guaranteed, I'm taking a sick day tomorrow. What are you going to do? I might take a sick day for the next 6 weeks. You might not send me out. I'm going to be in Aruba till like March of next season. You're not going to see me. I'm going to have a beautiful tan. I'm going to be drinking Mai Tais and doing nothing. And what are you going to do? You're going to pay me my $30 million, and we're all going to be happy-go-lucky. I mean, that's what you got to do. But a team like Oakland, you got to wonder what direction they have to go in. I mean, they already cut ties with Jeff Garcia. You wonder if they would have kept Jeff Garcia. You know, maybe they might win a game or two. I mean, they have a good running game. The defense can play. But like I said, when you look at this team, I mean, we might see back-to-back 0-16 football teams, which is sad. Sad day, but it's a very, very possible thing. I mean, I think, you know, they put everything they had into that San Diego Charger game on opening night, or on that Monday night of the season. And it shocked me, because I didn't think they were going to play like that. I'd have thought San Diego would have rolled them. But that wasn't the case. Oakland played very tough, but in the end, they lost. And like I said, it's just been a downward spiral. And you just got to wonder how far down they can go. I think 0-16 down is a very strong possibility about how low that team can go, because they are not a very, very good football team by any stretch of the imagination. Like, it's funny. I mean, they're just a bad, bad football team. And, you know, and the saddest thing, and like I said, now I'm gonna tell you something. Now, I thought they would finish second in the AFC West. I said it on the show. I picked them to finish second in the AFC West, and that's obviously a colossal mistake. You know, I've kind of given some faith. Now, I admitted that. I admitted my AFC West ignorance on the Oakland Raiders, but I did say that I liked Cincinnati in the AFC North to win it. Like I said, to win it. I'm not saying they're still going to do it, but darn it, man, they're surprising you. Like I said, you got to go out there on a limb sometimes. It's too fun playing it just normal to the vest, you know. It's too easy just saying, hey, I like the Chargers. Hey, I like the Colts. Hey, I like the Steelers. Hey, I like New England. Let's flip it to the other side. I like the Vikings. I like the Saints. I like the Cardinals. You know, NFC East, I still don't think you could pick one, even if I think they're all so goofy over there. You could probably eliminate the Redskins. I don't think they really have a shot even prior to this all going in. I still think it was a Giants, maybe Philly mix, and then you still have the Cowboys who are the Cowboys. And didn't you love how Tony Romo, you know, what they did yesterday was basically self-inflicted wounds when they got past the Chiefs Sunday. You know, they dug themselves into a hole, and he talked about the character and the, you know, like I said, that's a sad football team there. You wonder if they missed the playoffs. And like I said, I've read and saw things how they joked about John Gruden. You know, John Gruden during the game kissing up, talking about how great Dallas was. I wonder if he's planting the seed in Jerry Jones' head when the exodus of Wade Phillips, and I don't think Jason Garrett's going to get that job either. But like I said, that's another topic for another day. I'm your host, Bo Marchant, here in the End Zone. We're on the Fantasy Sports Channel, powered by All Access Football. And like I said, you want to go to the NFL Draft Bible. You want to check out the 2010 mock draft. It's fun stuff to see. You got College Football Insiders. We have the other shows. You can check out the schedules for that on the website. Like I said, we got 8 Men in the Box on Thursday. We have the fantasy show on Sundays. Sunday mornings, you want to, you know, who doesn't want to hear the fantasy updates on Sunday morning before you get that fantasy team rolling? You know, it's something that I know you guys want to hear. I know you're listening anyways because I see those numbers and those hits and those clicks. So I know the listeners are listening, people are reading it, and that's all good for everybody. Last night, I ain't going to lie, I love Ricky Williams. I love watching him run hard. You know, I think the Miami Dolphins are just a fun team to watch. I mean, you never know who's going to be lining up in the backfield. You know, I mean, you might see Larry Zonka and Jim Kick back there. You just don't know. And Mercury Morris. It's great. I mean, fourth quarter, they're driving down the field. I mean, the rookie Pat White is in there at the quarterback spot. Chad Henne's on the sidelines. I mean, you got to think as a defensive coordinator, what is this team going to – kind of reminds me of like when Boise State was pulling all that crazy stuff against Oklahoma during the bowl game on New Year's Eve. I mean, it was just crazy. I mean, how could Oklahoma defend that? You know, you look at the Dolphins. Who knows what – I mean, what are you going to do? Your defensive coordinator looking at that stuff, they got everybody lined up all over the place. You don't know where the ball's going. You got Ricky Williams in motion. You got Pat White doing this. You got Ronnie Brown coming around. And Ronnie Brown, I tell you what, man, he looks phenomenal. Running hard. Definitely, I think, you know, staying healthy has been the issue with him. But if this guy can stay healthy, I think he can, you know, he's definitely, I mean, he's outstanding at that role. Him and Ricky Williams stay fresh. I don't know the status of Cobbs. I know he left the game yesterday. I was glad to see Ricky. He limped off there in the fourth quarter of that last drive, but he was healthy enough to come back in. But I got a little nervous that he might be missing some time. And that's just as a fan. Has nothing fantasy, nothing anything like that. Just a fan of Ricky Williams, and like I said, it was nice to see him run well, you know, and Ronnie Brown too. Just a fun team to watch. I thought that was a great game last night. I really was. I mean, I was kind of dreading it all week. Like, oh, the Jets and the Dolphins, what a dragger this is going to be. But, you know, the fans in Miami were hyped up. You know what I mean? I thought it was an excellent game. Like I said, exciting. I mean, they're, you know, two nice young teams, looks like they're heading in the right direction, and that's like you said. I mean, the better everybody is, the funner the games are watch. I mean, if everybody could be 10-0 every weekend, I mean, the games would be great because there'd be so much on the line. You know, like this weekend, I'm going to cover the Steelers and the Cleveland Browns. I mean, where's the excitement in that? I mean, how do you write a storyline for that? You know, where do you come up with to take the readers away on this on-location piece as the Cleveland Browns head to Pittsburgh? I mean, what are you going to talk about? You know, I don't know. You know, talk about how, you know, Eric Mangini won't let anyone know who the left backup second string tackle is going to be till the start of game day or something. I don't know. Or maybe they'll trade Josh Cribbs away so they can get like a, you know, box of Cracker Jacks and a ping pong table. I don't know. It's a Georgia Nake. That organization is so funny. I just, it's just a comical organization. And like I said, they will be in Pittsburgh this weekend taking on the defending Super Bowl champs. And Rashard Mendenhall looks like he's got it going. There's a little question that, you know, he's starting to pay dividends, second-year running back out of Illinois. You know, looking at the landscape of the NFL, I mean, you know, you have the Giants, you know, undefeated, playing good football. The Eagles putting up a ton of points. Dallas, Washington, you know, Washington to me is, that's just a train wreck. I don't know what they do there. I don't know how they got to this place, but I don't know. It's just a bad situation. It's almost like they're not even worth watching to win. I mean, if they win, they'll beat a decent team, and then they'll lose to, like, the worst team in football. I don't know. It's just a funky. I mean, the NFC North, you got Chicago, Detroit, Green Bay, Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota looks like they're really playing well. And they needed exactly what they needed to happen. They had the two easy games off the bat, and then they get the huge game for Brett Favre against San Francisco. And I think that play at the end of that game, that, I mean, if there was any doubt in anyone's mind that this was going to work, that flipped the switch, and now they're just all going to ride the coattails. Because I think if it turns the other way, if they struggled out of the bat, if they would have lost to Cleveland opening day or struggled and lost to Detroit, you know, I think if Favre would have struggled, I think, you know, that underlying story of Tavares Jackson and Sage Rosenfels those guys not getting that job because they brought Favre in, I think that would have showed its head again. But like I said, him beating San Francisco on the last play and them playing the way they are, him playing the way he did against Green Bay. And, you know, and I know the show's about the end, but another thing, too, is put Aaron Campman back at D-line. I mean, if there, nothing aggravates me more than seeing that guy out in space trying to cover tight ends and wide receivers. I mean, you don't see the Colts putting Dwight Freeney out covering wide receivers and tight ends. You don't see, it makes no sense. You know, I always believe that, you know, these are the pieces you have. I think you should use every piece to have these guys succeed to the best of their skill level. You know, I don't think they're doing that with the Green Bay defense, particularly with Aaron Campman. I don't know. It's just, like I said, it's sad to see a guy who was so dominant coming off the edge and seeing how he just looks lost. It just, it's not right. But like I said, you got the Vikings. They look like, you know, they really are going to rally around Favre. He's playing well. And like I said, it's going to be an interesting NFC North as the season plays out with Jay Cutler and the Bears. NFC South, you got Atlanta, Carolina, New Orleans, and Tampa. Said you're going to have that big showdown coming with New Orleans and Atlanta. Like I said, Atlanta, New Orleans, those are your top teams coming out of there, and you wonder which one of those teams are going to have the true grit. Like I said, New Orleans, to me, they just have that special touch right now. It just seems like they can do no wrong. It's just each play is going to be a big play for them. So I got to go New Orleans there. That's not saying I like them. But from personal, I just think that's just their year right now. That's the way I'm going to stick with it until I see otherwise. NFC West, I mean, San Francisco looked like a strong team, but they just got destroyed at home this past weekend by Atlanta. Arizona hung on against the Texans, but, I mean, they really haven't showed much. And then Seattle, you don't know what to expect from them. They get destroyed in Indianapolis, then Jacksonville comes to town, and they destroy Jacksonville. So that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type team in Seattle, you don't know who's going to show up. The AFC East, you know, I don't know. You just assume New England's going to outlast everybody in the very end. You just assume they'll eventually rise to the occasion. You know, but I think they keep thinking that themselves during the game. You know what? We're the Patriots. We're going to find a way. It's just going to happen. But it's not happening. They're not making plays. The defense can't stop people. The offense can't score. You know, you wonder if the Jets' momentum can, you know, take them another 11 games, you know, to outlast the Patriots for that division title. Something to keep your eye on. Like I said, I don't think Miami and Bob, I know Buffalo's not. I mean, Buffalo would have a hard time winning the MAC right now. AFC North, it's going to be a fun division. I mean, you know, you have Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. You know, three great defenses, Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. And like I said, you know, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, they can all score. They got good defenses right now. So, like I said, that's going to be a great division to see who actually ends out on the top of that. You know, that, and the AFC North might be that new AFC South type division where, you know, you had, you know, Indianapolis and Jacksonville and Tennessee for a while all making the playoffs. This might be the year that the AFC North comes through and you see maybe Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh all make that playoff push. You know, and the Colts, Peyton Manning, AFC South, I mean, they just have it going on. Peyton Manning is just firing on all cylinders. Guy's been lights out. He's without Anthony Gonzalez. You know, I mean, Reggie Wayne has proven that he is the man. Never questioned that he wasn't, but like I said, that team's not missing a beat, and the defense is playing great. I mean, I really questioned it, how they were going to transition with Jim Caldwell and no Tony Dungy, but you know what? They are doing it. They're getting it done, and like I said, they look very stout. I mean, you look at all those teams in the AFC, I mean, early on, you might even want to go with the Colts as the early favorite just because of Peyton Manning and the, I think out of all the teams that you've seen in the AFC so far, they might be the team that looks most consistently dominant. You know, I don't think there's been any game where you really said, ugh, this team kind of is freaking me out. I said the Colts look tough. AFC West, I mean, Denver's 5-0. I mean, they have a great defense. I'm still not a believer in it. I'm just not, like I said. You know, they've always had their way. Shanahan, McDaniels, I mean, two different coaches, but they said for some reason Denver's had success against New England. That was a big win, but the teams prior to that, Oakland, they beat Cleveland. Did they beat the Chiefs too? I can't think of off the top of my head. But like I said, Denver, I'm still not putting that faith slot in Denver yet. I'm just not there yet. I mean, if they're 13-3 and they're in the playoffs, obviously, you know, that might change my mind. But 5 weeks in, like I said, it's still, you know, like if you know what it is, I don't think the Titans are an 0-5 football team, and I don't think the Broncos are a 5-0 football team. You know, I think they're somewhere both in the mix, 2-3, 3-2. Like I said, they got the fluke play by Cincinnati opening day. That was the fluke play. 1-20,000. The ball flips up and they catch it. And then you got a team like San Diego, where you just always wonder if this was going to be their year, if they were going to bring it around, if they were going to make it happen. And the one thing I thought was kind of shocking, because I was, you know, is when they lost to the Steelers, they really weren't freaked out so much in the locker room. You know, they were upset. But, you know, I think last season gave them that mentality that they couldn't lose. And I just hope that they don't feel that they can keep losing and not, you know, and have to flip the switch. I hope they get that sense of urgency quickly. So I'm your host, Bo Marchant. This is another edition of the End Zone on the Fantasy Sports Channel, powered by All Access Football. Make sure you go to the NFLDraftBible.com, where you're going to find NFL, college, UFL, CFL. If it's football, we're on it 24/7. And remember, get to the NFL Draft Bible 2010 mock draft. Player rankings, as things are coming out, they're updated every week. College Football Insiders, one of the top publications you can get out there. Read it. And like I said, great having you guys listening. You guys could have spent time listening or doing anything else, and I appreciate you listening to me babble for another hour here on the End Zone. Next week, we'll be having guests. I'm going to be looking for Jason Lonkin for the NFL Network, Jonathan Hutton of the Tennessee Titans, Mike Finn, he covers the Steelers. We're going to be having him on. We'll have him talk about that super match that's going to take place at 3 versus this weekend when the mighty Cleveland Browns travel to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Hey, have a great week. Hope your team does well. I hope you guys do well. Peace. I'm out.